Morning. This morning's gospel is a familiar one. Normally, we just do the same thing we do with the Christmas pageant. We sort of put it in together in the gospel stew with the narrative from Luke. But it has its own way of proceeding, its own view of the history, and its own take on the theology of what the birth of Christ means in the world. Luke, that we're perhaps more familiar with, both as the spine of the narrative, has them in Nazareth, has to have a census to get them to Bethlehem for the birth. Then after that, they go back to Nazareth, as one would expect. Here in Matthew, they're in Bethlehem. There's no mention of Nazareth yet. It appears like they've been there forever. They have a house there. They're not living in a stable. When the Magi come, they find the child in the house with Mary, his mother. It's only after the Magi come, and Herod has this idea of getting rid of the child, that they flee to Egypt. And then when they come back, they're afraid to go back to Bethlehem because it's too close to Jerusalem, and Herod's son is the king there now. So they move way up north to this little dinky village of Nazareth to sort of hide out. Rather a different history. And a slightly different take on the theology, but with some strong commonalities. In both cases, of course, we're talking about the birth of the Son of God. But what exactly does that mean? In Luke, we get the shepherds brought on. Shepherds were poor. Shepherds could not keep the Sabbath. A sheep will not take a day off. So shepherds were pretty lowly creatures in Israel. And to bring the shepherds on the scene is a way of saying that this birth is for the least significant, the most looked down upon in the whole nation of Israel. Matthew takes it one step farther. He brings on these magi, wise men, philosophers, mediums, kings, whatever, from the east, somewhere, sort of vaguely. From the east. But clearly, Gentiles. What Matthew is saying here is this is not just for us. I mean, Matthew is the most Jewish of the gospel writers, and he delights in the glory of my people Israel, as Simeon quotes it over in Luke. Clearly, you get the Bethlehem land of Judah. From you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel. He's very proud of his Jewishness and of Jesus' Jewishness. But not exclusively. It's not just for us. These magi are brought on the scene. This is one of those overture moves. The infancy narratives are like the overture to an opera. All the themes that you'll hear later in full-blown arias, you get nuggets of them, little bits and pieces in the overture. The Magi are part of the overture. This is going to spread out. This is going to be for everybody. Where do we hear it again? Go from chapter 2 to the very end. Right? Chapter 28, almost the last verse, next to the last verse. Go make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them, teaching them, and so on. All the nations. In the meantime, Matthew is quick to remind us that Jesus was sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. This is a very Jewish mission. But a Jewish mission that has the potential to expand, and after his death and resurrection, will expand. Go teach all the nations. And the Magi coming in from the east were a sign of that. This has been greatly misunderstood in the history of the church. It's been taken as a substitution. God took them out and put us in. Well, not only is that inaccurate, I mean, Paul rails against it, right? You have been grafted onto the vine of Israel. Didn't we hear that this summer when we were reading Romans? If you're tempted to boast, do not think that you support the vine. Remember that the vine supports you. It's not only inaccurate, but it's led to some of the worst atrocities that have ever been committed in the name of religion in the history of the world. What Matthew is saying the gospel is about, is that the Gentiles are now added in, grafted in, becoming a part of God's plan. What God's plan was from creation, only God knew, literally. For billions of years, God's gracious design was carried out in the slow evolution of the universe. And there was no other consciousness but the divine consciousness to be aware that it was there, much less how or why it was happening. Once human beings evolve on the scene, they begin to think about it. We always ask questions. Even from the beginning, I'm sure we ask questions. Does this mean anything? Are we a part of something bigger? Is it going anywhere? Will it work? We really didn't know. With Abraham and Sarah, we get an answer. God reveals God's graciousness to Abraham and Sarah. God starts building a people. For 2,000 years, almost, God is building a people. But it's one people. Here we have the branching out, the blossoming out. What has been carefully prepared for almost two millennia is now to be shared with all that is. That's the light that shines over the place where Jesus is, the light that is to be the light of the nations, the light that is to be the gathering in of all the peoples. As Isaiah says in that first reading, they shall be coming in from all over to Jerusalem. It's the theme that carried on by Paul in Ephesians, or by someone writing in Paul's name. Ephesians, as Al was teasing beforehand, is an important letter. It was the favorite letter of Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. Remember him? The great Jesuit paleontologist, theologian, mystic of the last century. It was his favorite part of the New Testament, I think. Certainly his favorite among the epistles. Because he saw in it this idea that as things evolved, as they rose, they would pull themselves together. Tout ce monde converge. Everything that rises converges. It is in our rising that we come together. And it is in our rising that we can support each other. And it is in our coming together and supporting each other that we can further evolve. And the process goes on and on. Every one-celled animal. It's pretty much like every other one-celled animal. I mean, you can see some differences in them under the microscope. Not much, because they all got to do everything. When we begin to evolve, we can begin to differentiate. Union differentiates. As we come together, we can rely on each other and specialize and do what we do best. There's a world of difference between a nerve cell and a muscle cell, a bone cell, a heart cell, a blood cell. And none of them can exist on their own. A one-celled organism can exist all by itself. A blood cell has no hope without a heart to pump it. A heart cell has no hope without some blood to pump. So on. The analogy that Paul uses so frequently about the interdependence of the body. This is the product of evolution. And as Teilhard saw, it kept on going, keeps on going, beyond the evolution of the individual organism. To talk now about the formation of a sphere of life on the earth, and a sphere of consciousness, and a sphere of Christ. With the coming of Christ, things break through. There's another level now. This is something that is available to the whole human race. God has spent 2,000 years preparing it among one people. But now it explodes. It spreads out. It begins to go out to all the nations of the earth, calling them all in, like the Magi, by the light of that star. We are all to become one. We're all to support each other. Becoming one doesn't mean becoming uniform. It means becoming different, like the different cells in the body. But relying on each other, giving to each other, living and dying for and with each other. This is a new concept of existence that is now shared with all the world. Do you actually believe in wise men coming from the east and the star suddenly appearing and walking across the town? They all notice it, but Herod, who's been watching, doesn't notice it, you know? No, it's not literally true. It sort of tells you that it's not literally true. But it surely makes the point. It surely gets the underlying reality of what the birth of Christ is about clear. It's about this light that has been for a people now breaking out to be for all the world, and all the world beginning to see it, beginning to come together, beginning to rise as one. This is why Epiphany has always been such a big celebration, and especially the Eastern traditions of the church, because it unfolds the meaning of Christmas in a way that says something about the future of humanity. This is who we are. This is who our God is. This is who we can, in our God, become.